Session number 21561, Reel 2.
John Hayes, Reel 2.
Yes, so we were posted to Cologne, and I was on 151 Night Fighter Squadron, Mosquito aircraft again. 139, incidentally, were Mosquito, more bombers and Pathfinders. But when this station, this squadron, was mainly Night Fighters, but they did used to do operations over Denmark and Norway. And anyway, I was a flight mechanic. And I was posted out to this dispersal, preparing the aircraft for takeoff late at night when they go off, particularly with the night fighter operations. And I was there for a while, and then I must have done reasonably well on the exam, because I was called up to the CO, and he said, "We've had a letter. They want you to go to Halton for a conversion course." So. I wanted to get into some action, to be honest with you, but anyhow, you had to keep on and do what you were told. Anyhow, I was sent to the number one school of technical training at Halton, RAF Halton. Now, this school is the school where Lord Trenchard started Royal Air Force, and it was superb. And I really must say that the teachers and the instructors, everything was so extremely well organised. They had a dental school there as well. They were first class. But this technical school at RAF Halton was the number one. It was the creme de la creme, and it's where all the apprentices went. You see, they were the boys. Every morning we'd march over the hill down to the classrooms with the bagpipes. And I was there for something like 4 or 5 months, maybe just a little longer. So I'd had quite a long time schooling in the Royal Air Force.
Any incidents that happened to you there at Halton?
No, it was quite calm. I was able to get home and see Mother, now and again from there, because I could go on the Baker Street line down through to Baker Street, that one, the Bakerloo line down to Baker Street. Just that there was a lot of sport there. There was no bombing there. We were away from the bombing there. It was a quieter period that time. But mainly concentrating on passing the final exam. Now, what was it? Well, there was an incident where when we eventually passed the exam, we all went down to Wendover, which was a near village, and of course we all went in the pub at the Swan. It's a famous old pub there, the Swan, and believe it or not, I don't think we drank more than about half a pint each. And of course we were all coming back over the hill, arm in arm, singing "The Parson's Waiting for Me and My Girl," and we were nabbed by the SBs and put in the guard room, and we were put on a charge, for disorderly behaviour. But it was just one of these things. This was to celebrate our passing of the exams. You see, how old were we? 18 years of age. But that there is a funny sequel to it, because what happened was we'd all jumped over the AOC's garden, and we were all having a tiddle up against the wall, having been in the pub. And this snoop, that's what they called the RAF police, he grabbed a lot of us, took us all down the guard room, put us on the charge, and we were charged with passing water on the AOC's roses. I think that might be unique. But the strange thing is, the AOC, many years later, his wife worked for me as a PRO in Kenya. Old Bill Howard Williams, he was a member of LegCo in Kenya, and his wife, Diana, used to work for me. This is many years, and I told him the story, because he just roared with laughter. See, he was an Air Commodore. See, and I was an LAC at the time. Oh, AC-1 at the time. Nice things happen. But there again, there were all kinds of chaps, Polish chaps. They were training Polish fellas. But the school was exceptionally good. I mean, we learned about the tensile strength of metals. All the classrooms were equipped for these things. And I mean, they'd been established before the war. Trenchard had given these boys a very good training. Boys who, incidentally, played a very important role in the war as skilled engineers. And I had much respect for, but they used to call them the brats. But they were exceptionally good engineers, all of them. Yes, so anyhow, that's at the school. Now, once when I'd finished at Holton, I was then posted back to the mosquito squadron, and I worked in the echelon, as they called it, which was in the hangar, on more advanced work. We were allowed to do more advanced work, having spent this time learning advancing. And then I was sent to de Havilland School in Hatfield, where they were building the mosquito. And I went there and studied hydraulics and other aspects of the flight. They were the mosquito, Geoffrey de Havilland was there, the designer. And somebody complained that this side, one of the side panels, when it came off, the tail blew off the aeroplane. De Havilland took it up himself over the top of Hatfield and tested it and showed it wasn't possible. It wasn't that to do with the tail. And it was a very interesting time there. And that's the first time that I've been in civilian billets. I stayed with an elderly married couple there, which was nice, having been in barracks all the time. And I stayed with him while I was at the school, De Havilland School. Then when that was finished, I was sent back to 151, the squadron. And with another chap now, we got together and we used to respray the aeroplanes. Tremendous boost to the morale, as I think back. There was an Australian squadron with us, 456, I think it was. And I had a good friend there who came from Southampton. He was known as Lofty Proctor. Now, he was a very good artist. And he too was an fitter to, as they called us. Now, what happened was that when the mosquitoes used to come into the hangar for their major inspection, everybody, the engineers, they do the engines, Rolls-Royce engines, and then we'd have to do the undercarriage, check for all the hydraulics, go through various sort of procedures. And then what Lofty and I used to do at the end was I used to spray the aircraft with the camouflage, grey and green, the grey and green camouflage, and he used to do the roundels, the yellow, red and blue. And of course when the aeroplane came out the hangar, it looked like a pristine condition, you see. And this had a tremendous effect on the crews. And the CO, the old man, they used to call him, wasn't very old, but he used to come down. And he came down and he said, he's talking to Chiefy, he was a flight sergeant engineer. Oh, he said, you're making a good job of these, Chief, you know. So, of course, we done well together, and it was a good time there, you know, for the with this particular squadron. Then suddenly we were, everybody had to pack up. We were on our way to Fairwood Common in Wales. You see, we were coming towards the Overlord, you know, there, and we didn't know it at the time. But anyhow, we were moving into position, really, for our operational station for Overlord. Really, that's what it was about. And then we got up to Fairwood Common, another nice station, and we operated from there with these bosses. And then Lofty and I were called into the office, by the Chief's office, with the WO there. Right, he said, one of you's got to go. So he said, one of you's got to be posted away. He said, I've got to split you boys up. So who's it to be? So we were a bit upset, you know, because we talked about going in the fleet air arm. We were looking for action, you see. We went and saw the CO, see if we could get into the fleet air arm, because it was a build-up to Normandy, and things were a bit of a lull at that time. But the old man said to us, he said, one of you's got to go. He said, we've got a posting here, and they need one of you. So we spun a coin, and it was me. And I got posted to 413 RSU, which was a typhoon, to do with typhoons. Lofty left, stayed at Fairwood Common on the Mozzies. And I was posted off to the typhoon It was a, what they call a RSU, was a repair and salvage unit. And I had to start revising on typhoons. You know, there's a set procedure you could do, read up, you had to read up about various things. The basic knowledge of the aeroplane was there, but you had to familiarise yourself with the, first of all, the hydraulic system, the fuel system, the controls, the ailerons and the elevators and so forth. And then you had to go through the inspection schedules, which you had to do on each inspection. So it was a set procedure, but it wasn't difficult because we'd been trained to do it. We could have done with a Mosquito, we could have done it with an Oster, we could have done it with a Lancaster. This was a set, this is what you were taught to do at the two schools. Anyhow, went off to, I was posted to Southend, along the Thames Estuary. And there were only two or three of us there, with a brand new unit, you see. And we didn't know what it was about, it was all done in secrecy. Just arrived at Southend, and aircraft jacks, engineering equipment, a Merton hangar all folded up, all arriving there, all our equipment started to arrive. We were preparing for something, but it never registered with us, you know, we just thought we were another unit, you see. It was a grass airfield, Southend. There was a Czech Spit Squadron there at the time, Czechoslovakian Spit Squadron. And it was also a ground where the boys coming back from the bombing raids would use it in emergency. Now, we had an old hangar there, what do they call that, that steel, corrugated steel hangar. And one day I'm sitting there just outside the apron, on the apron in front of the hangar, Flying Fortress in trouble, coming round, doing a round, so you could see he's in trouble. He's got two engines feathered. He's coming in, he's got to belly land it onto the grass. As he's coming in, his starboard wingtip hits the railway bridge at Rochford, the Rochford Railway Bridge, slews round. Next thing is, he's coming towards us in the hangar, but he stopped on the grass. And there's all the, this is training, RAF training. We'd all been trained to do this. Everybody's piling in, getting onto this flying fort. And we're pulling out these Americans, covered in blood, chucking them out as fast as we could. The boys at the other end have got the ambulances on the go. And we loaded up the ambulances, doused them all in foam. See, we were trained to do this. And when I think about those airmen, I checked afterwards, none of them died. They all survived, because I wrote to them in America. And the fellow wrote to me and said, for this association, they've got an association, that if any of them had been killed, it would have been listed. He said, they all survived. So that was, you know, that was our first experience. I mean, I'd had the bombing all that before, but here again, you see, the Blitz sharpened you. When you had somebody under the rubble, you had to get them out. And you didn't mess about, you know, you took risk. You had to take risk, otherwise you never saved them. You couldn't think of your own safety. When you see a bloke laying under a load of debris, you're not going to stand there and say, oh, I've got to get somebody else. You start pulling him out, you know. And it was the same with all these fellas. That was good training, anyhow. But anyhow, we were at the RSU in Southend, and when was it? We moved. Yeah, we were there before Christmas. And then we moved, we moved down to Thorney Island near Portsmouth. And this was the move, the real preparation. Now, in all this time that was going on, we had a commanding officer in this RSU. And then I never knew his first name, but his name was Wallace. So, because he got the nickname Nellie Wallace, because she was a variety star, you know, before the war. So anybody named Wallace was always called Nellie, you see. Anyhow, he'd been a pilot in the First World War or after. He was a bit older than us. And as I think back, what they were forming was an elite group of engineers, you see. They had there were about three officers, engineering officers. There was an equipment officer. The unit only comprised about 100 men, no more than 100 men. And everybody, or most of the chaps, were first-class engineers, particularly the NCOs. Now, these NCOs had served apprenticeships in Birmingham and in small arms factories and those sort of places. Duckworth, a fellow from Portsmouth, he was excellent. He was the head sort of engineering officer. And knowledge, they used to call them in the Air Force fountains of general knowledge. This is how they described them. And we didn't know what we were about to do. They called us an RSU, where we knew repair and salvage. It sounded, you know, like that, that we'd have to repair and salvage aeroplanes. But that's not exactly what we did. They said there was about 100. We were south end, and then we moved to Thorney Island. Then, as the spring came, everybody under canvas, manoeuvres all the time was going on. Get these buckets fit, you know. Everybody had to keep fit. Any shirkers, out. You know, they would never. Nellie Wallace, he was a stickler for discipline. Out you go, you know, and he'd replace them. So you can imagine, there's all these fellas, all technical men. We had our latrine wallers and other people, you know, used to do the cooks and that sort of thing. We had a Merton hanger. That was a hanger which made a canvas, like a bubble hanger, that we had to erect and dismantle within the hour. See, so a certain gang of them were detailed to do this, and it was like an athletic event. It wasn't a chore. You know, they say, right, let's have it up again, you know. And you had to bolt together. I wasn't on these crews, but they had to bolt together various sort of light structured girders, put them all in place, and then put this canvas skin over, and that it became a hangar. And you could wheel in Typhoons in there, so we could repair them, camouflaged, and of course out of the rain as well, you see.
And it was called a Merton hangar.
Merton, M-E-R-T-O-N, the Merton hangar, yeah. And we had one of those. Then, of course, we had to, the ammunition, brain guns, all this we had to do. Then we were allocated various jobs. Now, I was put in a repair gang, the crews they called them, and there was a sergeant, two F2As, that's two fitters, and a flight mech. So there's what I was at first, you see. So you got two fitter, two A's, flight mech, and sometimes you had an engine fitter, F2E they called him, you see. But the sergeant, he was a good engineer. Now, you had four of you, and you were allocated a three-ton truck. and in that, you ate, slept, kept your tools, toolkits, bench, everything, and four beds, two on top of one another. Ammunition kept underneath, brain gun, and we had a lean-to tent. It was either a Crossley or a Thornycroft three-tonner. This is what you were allocated. And I was in with a fellow named, didn't know his first name, they called him Tosh Reeves. Very good man. He came from Bourneville in the Midlands. The other chap I was with was a civil servant. He came from Eltham in Kent. And the other one, the flight mechanic, was a bit older. He was a bookmaker's clerk from Haringey in London. There was a greyhound racing track there. So Fred Burgess, Lynn Ostheimer, Tosh Reeves and myself, we were a crew. Well, there were other crews, all we kept together the whole time. We were all together all the time. And manoeuvres, training, went on and on, send them to Fundington, send them somewhere else, take this aircraft apart, taking root bolts out of Typhoon main planes, all these things, you had special jigs to pull them out, all had to be done in the field so you could repair an aeroplane, get it back in operations. And over command was Nellie Wallace, watching everybody. And as we came up towards the end of May, we were a formidable unit. You know, as I look back and think about them, all these boys there, And my goodness me, that training, it paid off. And then we were at Thorny Island, and we moved out of there, Old Sarum, and up through, and filtered our way eventually down to Gosport. And we were on a LST, landing ship tank. And my job was, see, we joined up with the wings by then, before then, because the Desmond Scott's 123 wing, the Tiffies were all operating out of Thorny Island, and they were just softening up over the other side of the channel, all rocket typhoons they were, and some of them carried the 500-pound bombs either side. But they're mainly rocket, these 60-pound rockets, you know, the eight of those. And they were going over and attacking behind the lines over in Normandy. And we eventually, I got an LST. First thing that greeted me was a load of German prisoners. Then I was told they weren't Germans, they were Ukrainians. Little fellas they were, you see. Because they didn't sort of fit the image of what we thought were these big... There were one or two Waffen SS fellas, you could tell from their uniforms. But that's the first thing I saw. And they'd be made to clear up all the vomit in the thing, because they'd all been sick, obviously, on their way back from Normandy, these blokes. And anyhow, my job was... we sort of came under the command of the Royal Navy, I suppose, because, anyhow, I was put in charge of a three-ton truck with a load of bombs, you know, the 500-pounders. They were all laid in these trucks. And I said to my wife, I said, that's how I went over there. We all went up on the deck, we played Bray. We were pulled out into the Cowes Road at the Isle of Wight. We sat on the deck playing Hankley Bragg. As we came about 1 o'clock in the morning, it got dark. I went down to my place and I had to look after these bombs. A naval officer came up to me and he said, I want you to do the fire watch, middle of the night. Okay, he said, I want you to start. So I went down and I was placed on fire watch. I had to patrol in the LST and up on the deck. And then when my term was finished, I had a bunk. I was putting there's some bunks on the LSTs where they used to pull down and shut the bunks. And I had all my kit on, rifle, and I just put my head down on the pillow and dropped off to sleep. And a fella woke me up. Johnny, we're going in, come on. And that was it, and that was the first thing. We went there, but when we got there, of course, the fighting, you know, the infantry pushed well in, they were doing it, they were in the bridgehead. And all we had to do, I went up there, they were bringing the prisoners back. We had to go single file up the beach, either side, and we made our way to a place. And the first job I got was a typhoon had force landed in a cemetery. So that's the first job we had. Tosh organised us. He said to me, Johnny, you cook the food, and we're going to go do this, do that. We took the leading edge petrol tanks off, done all the repairs inside, and then he went down, got a dispatch rider, aircraft ready, pilot came, got it out on a flat surface, and he took the thing off and back it went. So we were able, that's what we used to do, we had to repair them and get them back to the squadron. If they were write-offs, we never touched them, but there were so few, right, you never believe it. I know we lost a lot of aeroplanes. But if his writer was so badly damaged, we never bothered with it, you see. But the ones that were repairable, we kept on sending them back to the wings to keep up their numbers. And we'd done quite a lot. And in all places. Always liked going to the place where the Germans had been, because they always had dug nice latrines. They're good, healthy latrines, you know. And of course, they always had, if you got shot up, they always had good shelters, you know, dugouts. And I'll tell you, with the German dugouts, I think were incredible. I don't know whether they actually dug them, the Germans themselves. They probably had all these labour battalions with them doing it for them. But the latrines were first class. With us, you see, what we took with us was a bit amateurish compared to what the Germans had. Our latrines, I mean, this might be a strange subject to discuss, but our latrines, we all used to sit around the bloody circle. you know, it's a bit off-putting. You're sitting there, all bloated with their trousers round their ankles, all puffing fags, you know, and all blowing off, you can imagine. But the Germans had a different idea. They had this long, lovely, long row of beautifully polished lavatory seats, and I swear the bloody things were 20 feet deep, you know, where it used to drop. But we used to carry these buckets, and we had a latrine waller, and his job was to empty them. But they were streets ahead of us, you know, as far as that, the Germans were. And of course, as I say, the dugouts, they were well prepared. So if you got attacked, you know, with shell fire or with shot up by the Luftwaffe, not very often, I might add, you always had good cover. That was in Normandy. We stayed in Normandy until eventually the breakout, but what, Caen, of course we were there, we were outside Caen in the slit trench when the 1,000 bomber raid took place. We went one place to another place, bringing back the aeroplanes and also working on the wings, you know, where we operated from B7 as our main field, which was a place called Martrugny, between Bayeux and Caen. It was on that road, Bayeux and Caen road. And when the breakout came, of course, we moved up with behind the army, Canadians and the British. And then our first place was a place called EU, it's spelled. Then we moved on to Merville.
What would a field like B7 be like?
A big wheat field. But the engineers had gone in, the Royal Engineers and the Pioneer Corps, and they put down this, think of the name in a minute, a sort of steel mesh that you could land the aircraft. They tried other things, but the steel mesh was the best. They did try a sort of Hessian thing, but that didn't work. They tried it later on, but the steel mesh, the Royal Engineers and the Pioneer Corps, they were superb. You know, they'd get this thing down and level it out, and it would just be if we took over a farm. We were in a farm, you know, so a farmhouse, and we operated from there. And there's a plaque there still. I read in an RAF paper there's a plaque of a name in the wing. You know, we were 146 wing there. We kept changing wings because we were an RSU, we were very mobile. See, this unit we had was extremely well designed when I think about it. HQ stayed at the back. There was Nellie Wallace with the caravan, equipment and those sort of things. But the gangs, you see, were out, going all over the place. The crews, you see, the crews were going out, doing their jobs, then coming back again. And then as they moved up, we'd go up somewhere else, and they give you a grid reference on the map where the crash was. See, and then you had to go out and pick it up. If you had to bring it in, we had a big, what they call a Queen Mary low loader. We put the main planes on, and then we need a crane. We had a crane, crane driver would turn up, and he'd load the main planes, fuselage, and the engine, of course, and take it back to HQ, and they'd do it in the Merton hangar. So, organisation, not sloppy British, it was extremely well done.
Queen Mary
low. Yeah, the Queen Mary low loader. It's a very low loader, and it was enough to take main plane standing up on their side and a fuselage. And of course, he had a sort of a scammel to drive it. If you do a scammel, that's a camel. And then, but that was, of course, difficult to manipulate, but it was quite a long thing. The low loader, it was known as the Queen Mary, that's how they referred to it. That would take it back to HQ. We had one of those, and of course we had two cranes in the unit, crane drivers, and they would pick up engines or main planes and load them. Or when you were fitting new main planes onto, at one time, what happened in Normandy was that at the beginning we had a lot of dust, and we had this Sabre Napier engine, which gave us a bit of trouble. You know, it was quite a coarse engine. Used to fire it off with Kaufman cartridges. It was different to the Merlins, you know, this Napier engine. Of course, when we landed, the dust, you see, it was a bit dusty, and the dust kept getting up the air intake. And the boffins back in UK I think overnight they designed a special thing we had to fit into the air intake. It was a sort of blowback. When it exploded, it used to push back out all this dust. Marvellous, you know. So all the typhoons were suddenly fitted with these special pieces. You know, I think some of these, what was done in the field, it's fantastic. You know, it was, you know, but I knew how to dismantle and put together a typhoon, you know, from memory. I had a man write to me in Belgium. He was writing a book on B-70, the